So I'd like to formally welcome our speaker today, Eleanor Hodges, who is a Senior Energy Advisor for the Centre for Sustainable Energy. And that's not easy to say when I haven't had a good coffee this morning. So, Eleanor, you're extremely welcome, and we thank you for giving us your time. And I'd like to hand over to you now to give us an overview of what your organisation does and to tell us a little bit about what your role is, and then perhaps what we're all very keen on is some ideas on how we can all reduce our energy costs, which would be fantastic. Eleanor, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Judy, and thank you all for joining us on the call this morning. So this is a bit of a new one for me. So apologies if I'm sort of going too fast, if I'm not sort of giving you a chance to absorb any of the information. Do sort of let me know, and I'm happy to slow down or repeat anything. So I've prepared quite a bit, so I'm hoping I'm not going to sort of overload you with a lot of information. But I'm hoping to sort of give you enough time at the end. So if you have any questions, please do feel free to ask. And of course, you're free to sort of follow up with me at a later date as well. I have been a little bit poorly last week, so apologies if I'm a bit croaky or a little bit nasal as well, or if there's odd cough. I'll try to keep it to myself. But yes, I'll get on, I'll get into it. So my name's Eleanor, and I am an energy advisor at the Centre for Sustainable Energy. As Judy said, it is a bit of a mouthful, so I work in the advice team at the Centre for Sustainable Energy, and we sort of go by the home energy team because we think that's a little bit more friendly. But as an organisation, we're actually a national charity, and we do sort of various bits and bobs. To our mission is to support people and organisations across the UK to both tackle the climate emergency and end the suffering caused by cold homes. So it's the sort of the two prongs to it. There's the climate emergency side, and there's the sort of fuel poverty side of our work as well. So we have an advice team that works on various projects across the southwest of England. We're sort of running lots of projects at any one time. We're funded by local authorities mostly, and then various other bits and bobs as well. But we provide energy-related advice to pretty much anyone across that southwest region. So if you call into our advice line, we're always happy to help, and then we can sort of point you in the right direction into sort of one of our other projects. In Devon, the majority of the work that we do is in partnership with Western Power Distribution. So they're the distribution network operator. They're the company who are responsible for maintaining the electricity network in all of this area. And they run a priority services register for anyone who might need some extra support in the case of a power cut. So that's anyone who has any kind of access needs or health conditions, any mobility issues, anyone who's pension age or who has young children living with them, anything that would make someone a little bit more vulnerable if there was a prolonged power cut, or just who might need any kind of extra support is eligible for that service. But it's particularly vital. Anyone who relies on electricity for home medical equipment is signed up for this service. It's entirely free, and it's just a bit of peace of mind, really, to know that Western Power have that information to hand and can provide support sort of as appropriate. So you would get advance warnings if there's a planned power cut, and they also have a dedicated phone line that's staffed 24/7 to call for updates if there is an unplanned power cut. They're very good in that they do provide information in lots of different formats as well. So it is a good service to be signed up for, and it's entirely free. So at CFC, we are funded by Western Power Distribution to provide free and impartial advice to anyone who is on that priority services register. And that advice covers a whole range of topics. I say it's energy related, but it's really very broad. But our aim is to ensure that your home is warm and comfortable, and your bills are affordable. So I thought I would just provide a bit of an overview of the topics we typically advise on, as well as some sort of current advice, topical advice, I suppose, as sort of energy price rises are obviously in everyone's mind at the moment. So with energy prices on the rise, it's sort of changed the nature of our advice a little bit, because previously we would have supported people a lot with energy tariffs, with making sure they're on a cheap tariff, helping them switch to another one which provides better service, it's cheaper. Unfortunately, we're not able to help with that at the moment because there aren't any sort of cheaper options out there, because of the increase in the wholesale gas prices. So we've seen a lot of smaller companies collapse, and then their customers taken on by larger suppliers, and it's just not competitive for any of the suppliers to offer cheaper tariffs. Currently, the best option will be your supplier's default tariff, what's called the standard variable tariff. So this is subject to the price cap set by Ofgem, the energy regulator. The price cap was raised in April, and of course a lot of people will be feeling the effects of that price rise now. But it is sort of set until October now, when it will be reviewed again. It's not looking great in terms of the sort of average bill increases that are being forecast. And so it is worth having a think about your tariff now. As some suppliers are offering their existing customers fixed tariffs, which might be a more cost-effective option in the long run. So they're offering tariffs which you can sort of fix into now, which will be more expensive than their standard variable tariff now, but will be saving you money after that standard variable tariff increases again in October. But it is very much a sort of case-by-case basis. It very much depends on your individual household's energy usage as to whether a particular tariff will be a good option for you. So I would very much advise you to get a bit more advice from us if that's something that you're interested in looking at. Don't sort of feel pressured sort of by your supplier to sort of fix in to what might be a more costly tariff without doing a little bit of research. Sort of another issue that we're coming across at the moment is suppliers sort of hiking up direct debits really, really significantly, sort of more than the energy price rise. In order to, I suppose, cover some of their own costs. Even in cases where customers have credit on their accounts. And this is something that we're trying to encourage people to challenge if you feel that you are overpaying for no good reason, really. So what we would always say to do is to make sure that if you have a sort of a standard meter, not a smart meter, making sure that you are sending through regular readings to the supplier so that the bills are accurate, so that you can sort of evidence your claim that they are sort of charging you too much. And if you have a smart meter, the supplier should receive this information automatically, and the bills that you are receiving should be based on your actual usage. And if this isn't the case for whatever reason, then it's worth investigating. A lot of you might be sort of aware of the package of financial support that the government's recently announced, but I thought it'd be worth sort of going over it now, as it is, you know, there is a bit of support out there, and in some cases, depending on your circumstances, you might be entitled to quite a bit. So every household will receive the £400 grant. So every household that has their own electricity meter will be paid the £400 sometime between October and March next year. And if you pay by direct debit or when you receive the bill, the money will be credited to your electricity account automatically. If you have a prepayment meter, you'll receive a voucher in the post, which you can then use to top up your meter. And if someone in your household receives a means-tested benefit, so that could be universal credit, pension credit, or income-related employment support allowance, they will receive two payments totalling £650. The first is due this month, and then the second will be paid at some time in the autumn, which I know is quite vague, but unfortunately that's the most up-to-date information that we have. Both of these payments will be made directly into the bank account that the benefit is paid into. And there is also a completely separate £150 payment for anyone who receives a disability benefit, such as attendance allowance, disability living allowance, or personal independence payment. That payment will be made in September, and again, that would go directly into the bank account. And then there is also a top-up on the winter fuel payment for any household who normally receives this. So in addition to the normal payment, there'll be £300 added to the top. And that will be made in November or December, as usual. And then the final thing in terms of financial support available is the Warm Home Discount Scheme. So that is financial support that's available from your energy supplier. And this year, it's going to be an automatic payment of £150 for anyone who qualifies for it. So it's essentially anyone who's receiving any kind of a means-tested benefit, they should receive this £150 payment automatically from their energy supplier. So if you pay by direct debit or on receipt of the bill, the £150 will be credited to your electricity account. And if you have a prepayment meter, you will receive a voucher again. And then there's also funding that's been made available to local councils as well, called the Household Support Fund. But each council will sort of choose how to distribute this funding. And who qualifies for support. So I can't sort of give sort of details of that now, but there are sort of councils who are choosing to distribute that funding to support agencies in the area. So there might be funding for things like prepayment meter top-up vouchers and things like that. But our advice always would be to make sure that you are getting everything that you are entitled to income-wise. If you haven't had a benefits check in a while and you're on a lower income, then I would urge you to have a look into that. Pension credit in particular is a really underclaimed benefit, and it's really simple to check if you're eligible and to apply. Even if you are eligible for just a small top-up on your pension, for example, it opens other doors in terms of benefits that you might then be eligible for and discounts on things like bills. So while we're sort of in the warmer months and hopefully not feeling the effects of these bill increases too much at this point in time, it is worthwhile sort of thinking about sort of changes to your home that you can make now that will save you money on your bills going forward, particularly anything that you can do to reduce heat loss will mean that you're spending less on your heating bills when we come to the colder months. So there is funding available for a range of insulation measures and for heating upgrades. The most common route for accessing funding is through something called the Energy Company Obligation Scheme. So that's known as eco-funding. The larger energy suppliers are sort of compelled to pay into a central pot of funding, which installers can then access. They can use that funding to install measures if your household is eligible for the funding. So we're at a bit of an annoying sort of point in time at the moment where sort of round three of that eco funding has now come to an end, and we're waiting for round four to be properly announced. So they have changed the eligibility criteria a little bit in that it's becoming a bit more targeted at those who are receiving means-tested benefits or on lower incomes, and it's very much to do with targeting homes that are particularly energy inefficient as well. Unfortunately, I can't give you sort of the full details of the eligibility criteria now, but if you are interested, I would sort of strongly advise you to contact us later this month, and we should be able to give you sort of the full details then of what's available and the eligibility criteria. But typically, this funding covers things such as cavity wall insulation, party wall insulation, loft insulation, and boiler upgrades. Now that a lot of homes have had these sort of the most straightforward measures already, so things like cavity wall insulation and loft insulation, the funding is now covering a much broader range of measures. But it's really dependent on which installers are operating in your local area and what they offer. It is worth following up on if it's something that you're interested in looking into. And there is also, as I mentioned, funding for new heating systems. So we're still seeing funding available for first-time gas central heating for properties that haven't ever been connected to the gas network. If you're in an area where that sort of there wasn't gas previously, and there now sort of is the possibility of getting connected, then it might be possible to have first-time gas central heating installed. A lot of the time, it is possible to get most of that work fully funded, particularly if you have any insulation work that needs to be done to the property at the same time. And it's also possible to apply for a grant to pay for the actual gas connection as well. As well as that, there is also a scheme that's for installing a new renewable heating system. So this grant is available to anyone. So it's not means tested. So anyone who is looking to install a new renewable heating system, such as an air source heat pump or a ground source heat pump, then they can apply for this sort of one-off payment to go towards the cost of installing a new heating system. And then there's also bits of funding available to upgrade old and inefficient boilers. There's sort of less of this available now than there was, but if it's possible to do some insulation work to the property as well, it might be sort of a cost-effective option if you have a boiler that's sort of over 7 years old and it's not running very well, or if it's broken, then this may be something that is worth looking into. You can often have smart heating controls fitted at the same time as well, which can really sort of make it worthwhile, because not only are you getting a much more efficient boiler, which will save you money, but you're also installing smart heating controls, which means that the system much easier to control, and you can make sure that the sort of the heat is targeted where you want it and where you need it. I know it's a bit of a funny time to be talking about heating, but it is very much the time of year where you should be thinking about sort of making these changes sort of before you need to, really, before we get into the colder months. And as well as these large measures, there are lots of low-cost and no-cost things you can do to improve your property's energy efficiency and save money. You know, particularly if your home feels drafty, it's very cheap and simple to address this. There's lots of really good products available, really sort of simple things like draft-proofing strips, which can be applied around windows and doors. You could have something like a draft excluder brush fitted to the letterbox, or you could have draft excluder snakes, which you can place in front of external and internal doors. Even just replacing curtains with thicker curtains can make a big difference in making sure these are closed at dusk to keep the heat in. And, of course, in the hot weather as well, the reverse is true. If you want to keep the heat out, you can make sure that those curtains are closed during the day to keep the house nice and cool. A really good product that I would recommend is reflective radiator panels, particularly if you have an older property with solid walls, or maybe you've got uninsulated cavity walls. These are essentially just sort of sturdy bits of tinfoil which you can pop behind your radiators. They can be I purchased some where you sort of just stuck them in place with double-sided tape. So they're really easy to remove again if need be. But they just get popped behind the radiators, and then the heat essentially bounces off that reflective material and back into the room rather than being lost through that external wall. It's also just sort of worthwhile thinking about how you're heating the property. if you can sort of prioritize heating the room that you're in, the room that you spend the most time in, rather than the whole house. We always recommend heating the room that you're spending time in to between 18 and 21 degrees, but your other rooms can be slightly cooler if you're just sort of in and out. And this is where it's sort of really good to make use of your heating controls, particularly if you've got valves on your radiators that allow you to control the heat of those individual radiators. You can sort of turn them up in your living area and turn them down in other rooms. And doing so will just mean that you are able to, you know, direct that heat, keep yourself, you know, warm and healthy, but you know, make sure that you're not sort of wasting heat elsewhere. And then if you're looking to reduce your energy usage, it is worth thinking about the appliances which cost you the most to run. As a general rule, anything that uses electricity to heat or cool will be quite costly. So if you're using portable electric heaters, fan heaters in particular are very expensive. So we would recommend using the central heating instead if you have it, or using something like an oil-filled electric radiator. Particularly one which has a timer on it. If you have an electric shower, unfortunately they're one of the big culprits in terms of high energy bills. Our advice is just to try reducing the time you spend in there by 1 minute. If you could sort of get this down to 4 minutes, it will actually save you roughly £176 a year. And I suppose a kettle works in sort of much the same way as an electric shower. So unfortunately they cost quite a bit as well. But the advice there is just to only boil as much water as you need. If you're making just one or two cups of tea, you can sort of measure that out. And that will save you £27 over the year. Of course, fridges and freezers need to be on constantly, but you can make sure that they are running as efficiently as possible. If you have a frosted over freezer, particularly sort of an older chest freezer, this could be costing you a lot of money. That could cost you an additional sort of £203 a year to run, just because it's running so inefficiently. If you're able to make sure that it's defrosted regularly, then that cost will go right down. And we recommend keeping freezers about three quarters full, so not overstocked. And it also doesn't need to be stocked full of food either. If you can sort of pack out the extra space with carrier bags or bottles of tap water. It will just mean that it's running as efficiently as it can be. And then making sure that both fridges and freezers have a little bit of a gap between them and the wall so that the hot air can escape and that they're cleaned behind them every now and again just to help with that airflow. And, you know, incorporating, you know, just a few of these habits, just being aware of some of the running costs of more costly appliances, it can become second nature quite easily and can shave some money off your bills. It's wonderful if you can think about, you know, making some large changes to your home. But even if you're not in a position to do that, I think just incorporating some of these smaller methods, some of these behavioural changes will make a difference as well. All right, I think I've sort of come to the end of everything that I've sort of prepared. But as I said at the beginning, please feel free to ask questions now. And also if you want, you know, some more tailored, in-depth advice, you're very welcome to get in touch with us. We have a free phone advice line that I think our opening hours at the moment are 9 to 5. So the number for that is 0800 082 2234. I'm sure Judy would be happy to share that information.
Yep.
With you.
I've made a note of that.
Brilliant.
And we can share that after the meeting.
All right, lovely.
So, shall I ask if anybody has a burning question? I have actually had one submitted from somebody that couldn't be here today, but let's open it out to those who are with us to start with. Has anybody got a question for Eleanor?
Yes.
Go ahead, Jane. That sounds like... Go ahead, Jane.
Hi, Helena. The question I have is about accessibility. I've got a heating system, but it's digital and I'm totally blind and I can't use it. And also the recommendation is smart meters. They can tell you what energy you use and what's more efficient, whether it's more efficient to boil your kettle to heat your water for your pasta or to heat it on the stove. And I can't access that information. I'm working out, I've got someone with occupational therapy coming today, so hopefully I can work out an accessibility option. But going forward, are there faults with the energy companies of how disabled people access these systems that will make you be able to use your homes more efficiently, like set your digital thing to heat your room that you're in, or, you know, to give you that control that, you know, those pennies matter now. So is that question being addressed? Because every time I've made some phone calls to date, they've gone, oh, it's not our responsibility, and lots of slopey shoulders. As I said, I've got other solutions to this. But, you know, it needs to be thought about when these smart systems are installed. How do disabled people access them? Sorry, Helen, I'll stop there.
No, it's a really good question and something that I was doing a little bit of digging around about before I got on the call, because it is a big issue. You know, a lot of this does rely, as you say, on the in-home display that's attached to the smart meter and being able to visualize, you know, what's being spent. And, you know, if the standard go-to is just a sort of digital screen that's, I don't think, very accessible for most people, unfortunately. They're not very intuitive. You know, that's not really good enough, is it? I mean, I just having a little look, and it seems that it is possible to request an accessible in-home display from your energy supplier. I don't know how... I don't think this is very well advertised, but it seems this is something that the supplier should be able to offer you, which has, you know, it has sort of nice... you know, larger buttons as well as the text-to-speech function, so that you can navigate around it, and, you know, just a much clearer sort of interface. But I don't know if it is something that they are immediately offering, but I think it is worth pushing for that. Maybe I will, if I share this with Judy, perhaps it's something that can go up on the website as well.
We'd be very happy to come to create a bespoke information sheet about this. I'm just looking at the RNIB website, And yes, indeed, it says exactly as you've said, Eleanor, you know, we are all eligible for an accessible smart meter.
Brilliant. Okay. Okay, that's brilliant.
It's how we get that from the energy provider, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's so I did obviously mention the priority services register that's available through Western Power Distribution, but your energy supplier should also operate their own priority services register. So if you're, you know, on the phone to them, it is worth making sure that you are added to that register, as I think that could sort of open a few doors in terms of making sure that you are being offered things such as the accessible in-home display. In terms of heating controls, it does appear that the new smarter heating controls that are coming in are that bit more accessible. But I think it's sort of worth, if it's something that you're thinking about, it is worth doing a little bit of research into the best options. I mean, I'm happy to do that again and could send that over to Julie as well. I think the installer that we work with, who's offering smart heating controls, I think it's a Nest which they offer. So I will have a look into that and see if that looks any good potentially.
Brilliant. Yeah, actually, just as a note, it's Karen here. My friend who's sighted received new storage heaters about 2 months ago with the smart controls, and she thought she went to visit her son in Newcastle and put the, well, it was back in early spring, so she got them before then, and she thought she was putting her controls on so that the heating would just be very, very low, enough so that pipes wouldn't freeze, etc. And all the doors were closed, so and the windows shut, so she went. When she came back, the smart controls, the temperature had gone down or something, and they put the heating up, so it was actually on full heat, full blast, and had been for nearly 2 weeks. And she was really upset, and she still can't make it out, and she's sighted. So I think, you know, I don't know whether you want to talk about that a bit, but it's made me very wary of, I have storage heaters where you have the knobs, so it's low, high, whatever, and it stays that way, and they come on at night. You know, and I would be very wary of getting one of these smart, where the computer has a mind of its own and it can be, you know, switching on the heat levels without you being in charge of it. Could you please talk about that a little bit, Eleanor?
So. Yes, absolutely. Yes, I think that is a genuine concern. And although we're talking about, you know, these being smart controls, unfortunately, they're not always the most straightforward or the most intuitive. And, you know, there are sort of various different modes available. I mean, I'm hoping that your friend, that her system also has sort of a holiday mode, which can be set, which would just keep it on that low temperature, and it wouldn't sort of adjust to sort of increase the heat, because it, you know, in that sort of holiday mode, it would be aware that sort of no one's at home and therefore needing the heat. But it is a little bit of a minefield, particularly if you're used to a very different setup. If you're used to, say, the old style night storage heaters with their manual controls and you know, turning there's little dials round to get the result that you want. It can be a bit of an adjustment. I think it's always worth in those cases. So I apologise if it's a little bit complicated, the setup. So as I said, we do have our project with Western Power Distribution that covers all of Devon, but we do also work with sort of local partners who are sort of their own energy advice organisations, which cover between them sort of all of the Devon area. So what we would do if you wanted to sort of have more in-depth advice on things like heating controls is we would sort of point you in their direction, because there's sort of quite a few that, as I say, between them, they cover all of Devon. So wherever you are, you should have your sort of local energy advice agency. And they are able to do things like visit you at home, and they can help with things like the heating controls. They can also help with installing things like draft proofing. They can offer low energy light bulbs. If you have maybe an issue with your bills, you want to just check that your bills are accurate, then they can assist with those. So if you're in that position where you would like a little bit more, you know, tailored, in-depth energy advice, then please do get in touch, and we can sort of point you in the right direction of your local energy advice agency.
Ellen, can I just, sorry, it's Jane again, let me just take more time. The thing about the heating stuff, I think if there is that, if those local energy people help, it's the also what systems talk to each other. Sometimes your system on the wall, like the smart bit or the control, doesn't always have the same brain as your boiler control. So things like this, what Karen's saying, it might be a problem with that. And it's whether there's access to heating engineers that would come in and assess how your equipment coordinates with each other. So it does work, and then show you how to use it. I suppose that's where would those local companies do that sort of thing?
So they are, do have those sort of local connections, and they will have sort of go-to people or can advise on sort of local engineers if that's what's needed, and they can be very very hands-on and help with all manner of things really. If it's an issue, if you do have more of an issue with the boiler, you can also get some assistance with that. If you do have any questions like that, it is worthwhile following up now, as I say, particularly sort of at this time of year before you're sort of reliant on the boiler and the heating controls. Get it sorted now.
I think you've just put your finger on it. I've just had a quick look, and there are 5 energy organised or energy saving, local energy saving organisations covering Devon, just as you've described, Eleanor. So if anybody would rather speak to us, we can bring up that information as well, so that you could get someone in your own area coming to help you with some of the very practical side of things, which I think might be useful for many of our members, to be honest. So perhaps I'm now thinking this could be quite a good subject to include in our magazine.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Who is that? Sounds like Les, is that right?
No, it's Mark.
Mark, have you got a question, Mark?
Yeah, it's not for my generation, it's for the older generation. You know when you said about disabled and machines and everything when power goes down?
Yeah.
Do you do anything for vision impaired people like when the power electric goes down and everything, do they get told things like that? Or like you could help them that way? Because when it's in the dark, when you're in the dark and everything, and it's in the dark again when you've got no lights on, they tend to panic, I think.
Yeah.
Do you do anything to help them that way?
Yep, so anyone with any kind of sight loss would be eligible for the priority services register. So they would have access to the support I mentioned. So that would be the the dedicated helpline that you can call for updates. And if there is an unplanned sort of prolonged power outage, then Western Power make sure that they're sort of calling round everyone who's on that priority services register to make sure that they're okay and they've got what they need. And they do work with local services as well, emergency services. If someone's very remote and, they rely on electricity for home medical equipment, then, then they organise getting out generators and things like that.
Sorry. You say, they can call them and everything. What about you can't call them? That's the problem I have in my head. It's not me so much as the next generation ahead of me. I'm thinking,
okay.
Do you have them on a list
or
something?
Paragen
gets in touch with them, to know they're vision impaired or something like that. They can contact them automatically. And then at least then gives it peace of mind. That's what I'm thinking.
Hello, Eleanor, it's Karen here. Mark, I'm on that register.
How are you?
And in the, a few years, I was on it because of my arthritis and also some medical conditions. And they are so good. Twice now there have been power cuts, not for a couple of years, so this is going back a few years, but they still regularly, they send you a letter to just say, are you still wanting to be on the register? And what happened for me when I had the power cuts was that because I need, I can't take cold water. I always say it has to be lukewarm. I needed hot water. And on one occasion, a lady from the Red Cross suddenly arrived within an hour with a big flask of boiling hot water. And this was 2 o'clock in the morning, left the flask with me and said she'd come back and collect it in a few days' time. So I had my hot water. And on the second occasion, they were actually fixing the fault quite close within a few miles. And the lady on the phone said, right, we'll, our team always have the facility to boil a kettle for their tea breaks. I'll get them to come round with a flask for you. And they did. So they are so good. It's worth being on the register for anyone. Sorry,
The letters there, Karen? That's all right. What about the letters? Do you get them in big letter or small print?
Print because they don't know I'm registered severely sighted yet. I haven't got round to telling them
That's why I'm thinking, do they do that? That's why I'm asking lots of questions.
Oh, yeah, no, that would make you eligible anyway.
I'm just checking to see they do it as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
absolutely.
You do.
Eleanor,
okay,
I'm sure that because they're working with that group, but, it's not just people with sight loss that need clear print. It's some people with autism, for example, find it much easier if it's in clear print. So I'm sure they're very much aware of that, Mark, and I think it's just a case of explaining to them why you need to be on that register.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, it's very easy to sign up online, and their website is fully accessible. But if anyone wanted us to help them sign up, we could do that over the phone as well. If you wanted to give us a call and say you were interested in signing up for priority services, then we can do that on your behalf. And as was said, just let them know of any sort of preferences that you have. or any reasons that you might need extra support, and they will do their best to help.
That sounds wonderful. I've just, while you've been speaking, Eleanor, I've just had a quick look at Cozy Devon. I'm sure you're aware of that organisation. And that does free energy efficient improvements for lower income households. And that's very important across Devon and Torbay. So that covers East Devon, Mid Devon, North Devon, Southhams, Teignbridge and Torridge, Torbay, West Devon and Exeter City Council. So if anybody feels that they haven't got the things that Eleanor was describing, the energy efficiency in things like your the cavity wall insulation, just give us a call and we can go through this with you as well. Or as Eleanor said, we'll have that number for her organisation, the Centre for Sustainable Energy, and I've got that number here, so it saves anybody needing to write it down. That's fantastic.
Yes.
Now, I was going to say, are there any more questions from those who are on the line at the moment? No?
No.
I feel I really must just, this is a rather general question, Eleanor. I hope you may not know the entire answer, but perhaps it's worth a comment. This is from one of our regular callers, but she's asked me to ask you if there is any research with regard to the cost and the savings and the environmental impact, or maybe the benefits of producing all the machinery to harness particularly sustainable energy. So what she's really saying is the cost of producing solar panels, you know, the hydroelectric plants, wind turbines, all the geothermal work that's going on at the moment, versus the damage that's done to the environment through the vast amount of engineering to produce that sort of equipment in the very first instance. Do you know if those are balancing out at the moment or whether we're still in the payback period? Because we all see the wind turbines, the vast solar panels, farms that are everywhere at the moment. Have you any idea whether that is, are we in credit yet, or is it still, you know, we need more of those to make it work?
I mean, it is a very good and valid question. With all of these technologies, there's what's called embodied carbon, which is, you know, the energy that's being used to simply to make these products in the first place. I sort of don't know of any research sort of off the top of my head about sort of where we're at in terms of, as you say, whether we're in credit.
Yeah.
I would just, I mean, my personal view is that, we are now sort of thinking about how all of these technologies work together and how they can sort of be best used in combination, and also being built to last that much longer. There are people now who are being trained up and are much more aware of how to make fixes and repair things like solar panels, like solar hot water systems, and make sure that they are actually going to last. But yes, if you have, say, a gas central heating system that's relatively new, then my advice would be to sort of carry on as you are with that existing heating system until it's becoming inefficient, rather than, say, ripping out what's essentially good to replace with something that's just lower carbon. I think it's just sort of a bit of a common sense approach that's needed. Funding out there that's sort of particularly geared towards replacing outdated, fossil fuel intensive, heating systems.
Yeah.
And that is very much a good thing.
Sorry, Karen here.
Go on, Karen.
I don't think it's just to do with credit money-wise. I think it's to do with credit for not using fossil fuel and, you know, helping to fight climate change and to help the planet. So I think there's huge credit in solar panel, you know, I mean, in the alternate technologies. So it's, sometimes I don't think we can look on it in the same way as we did with other technologies. You know, there's a credit that comes from, if you use this, it's going to help for all the generations to come, and we'll develop it better, you know.
Sorry. I think what our the original poser of that question is by all, with all the wonderful technology that is popping up all over the place, and as you say, she's used the wind turbines and the solar farms as an example, are they actually doing more harm to the environment just because of the new being built? But I think, as Eleanor said, there's probably not been that updated research to know whether we're at the tipping point yet. But you're quite right, Karen, because the truth is we're running out of oil, which means we're running out of gas, which, you know, and we have to move across. And you're right, Karen, that it's not just about the money today. This is an investment for the rest of the future. And that's the last little question I had to ask you on someone else's behalf. We all know that gas boilers are being phased out eventually, new gas boiler installations. What's your advice for somebody right now who has a gas boiler which needs replacing? Should they basically bite the bullet and replace that with an electric system now, or, because it is slightly cheaper still, would they be better still sticking with a gas boiler and, as you said, keeping it going as long as possible?
I mean, I think it really depends on the sort of the suitability of the property a renewable heating system. So if you have a newer property that's maybe been built with insulation in the walls and it's reasonably airtight, then a renewable heating system such as an air source heat pump might be a good option for you now, you know, bearing in mind the fact that, you know, wholesale gas prices are going up as well, you know, meaning that an electric heating system might actually be a more cost-effective option, or more cost-effective than it has been anyway. If you know it sort of depends how much work you need to do to your property to get it to the point where that system is going to be efficient, and it's all about getting I think impartial advice on this, and that's something that we aim to give, and that those local energy advice agencies, they're working towards developing their retrofit advice services as well. So I believe most of them will be offering both a sort of a paid for advice service if you're in a position to think about that, or they'll be offering sort of options for funding as well. But all of us, we are, you know, we are impartial, so we're not going to be trying to sell any kind of specific technologies or systems. You know, we will be trying to give you the right advice to make sure that that you're going to be, you know, installing an efficient system that's also going to not be completely unaffordable to run as well. If you are at a point where you're looking to replace, say, an old gas boiler, then definitely do get some advice and sort of see which sort of direction it would be best to go in, and what funding is out there as well that you can access.
That's fantastic advice. I think for lots of people that's going to be an issue over the next couple of years. And knowing there's somebody there in your organisation that can give that impartial advice, it's not your local energy company that's supplying you with that gas or that electricity, that's really helpful. Are there any other questions before we draw this morning's speaker event to a close? No. Well, it just falls on me to thank Eleanor so much. I can't tell you how many notes I've been taking, Eleanor. So we hope that we can keep some of this information here for our members and for those members that perhaps haven't called in today. And I hope you wouldn't mind us perhaps calling you ourselves in the future just to make sure that we're, you know, on top of all this, because I think things are changing very fast. And it would be really helpful perhaps to get a regular speaker event from somebody in your organisation, and you preferably, because I think this is something that is going to be hugely important for our members, as Mark's described. When you can't see some of the dials, the digital displays on smart devices, having that extra support is going to be absolutely vital as energy costs increase. So thank you so much, Eleanor. I can't thank you enough for your time today. And thank you also for everybody that's called in this morning. It's lovely to see we had so many on the call. And I hope to see some of you or hear some of you again tomorrow for our Wednesday call. And if not, for our next speaker event on the third Tuesday of the month next month. Thank you again, Eleanor, and I
thank
hope
you,
you
Eleanor.
Have a lovely
thank
day.
You.
Thank you.
Thank
well,
you.
Take
thank
care,
you all so
everybody.
Much for joining.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have
bye-bye.
A good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.